This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.
And there it is. That's as good as it gets on this stage. Nissan Townstar EV strikes again. It's an unstoppable van. Unstoppable!
Look, just fantastic. You can actually see the ProPilot technology in action. Effortless parallel parking.
It moves with all the confidence that comes with a 5-year warranty.
And with a bench full of all-star van experts, there's real strength in depth here.
That's all-star quality.
Search Nissan Townstar EV and visit your local all-star van centre to see for yourself.
Terms and conditions apply. 5 years or 100,000 miles, whichever comes first.
ProPilot is an advanced driver assist technology. Driver's responsibility to stay alert, drive safely, and control vehicle at all times.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by Mook Delivery, bringing you the food you love. Mook Delivery, like McKenna, brings a top-tier lineup. With Leif Davis-esque delivery right to your door, you'll always be winning with Mook Delivery. So the only thing left to say is, you win. Order now on the McDonald's app, and you can also get rewards points delivered too, so that ordering today means some tasty rewards for tomorrow. Only via app at participating restaurants. 18 plus. Rewards registration required. Points only on menu items. Delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Hello and welcome to part two of this very special edition of the Blue Monday podcast. I'm still Craig Finbo, and joining me again is Ipswich Town legend George Burley, and this time to talk about his managerial career. So, George, early days were up in Scotland in terms of your management career. You were player manager at Ayr, is that right?
That's right. Once I sort of finished my career, I was looking to get into the coaching and managerial side. I did my full licence at Lillishall in my latter days as a player. And when I was doing that, I met John Gorman, actually, a good friend of mine, and a lovely lad. And he said, come to Gillingham and play for a season. And that. So I played for a season and did all my badges. Then the opportunity was to go to Scotland. And Tommy McLean invited me to Motherwell. He didn't know me that well, but Jim McLean had been working with Scotland when I played, and I think Jim recommended me. So I went and worked with Tommy, and really enjoyed it. Played there for a couple of seasons. We did quite well. Wasn't a bad team. Scotland, Rangers, Celtic, and then the rest are trying there. But Tommy was an excellent coach, good knowledge of the game, and I enjoyed working there and picked up some things. Then my hometown, Ayr United, asked me to go there. I was still playing with Motherwell. So I went there as player manager. So I was going back home, really. So back to see my mum and dad and people, my brother in Ayrshire. So that was different. And so the wife and family chugged up north and lived up there.
And then in June 1994, you moved down to Colchester. How on earth did a move to Colchester come about? As you say, you were up in Scotland and the family were up there, to move back down to the east of England.
Yeah, we moved, but we always wanted to stay in England. But sometimes you've got to move away to come back. So I always wanted to come back. My wife was from Dunmore in Essex, and she's had a family here, and we'd lived here. You know, 14 years as a player, so we wanted to come back to Ipswich. Got an interview at Colchester, and I think I was still playing, and I think me being playing as well would help to get the job. And lucky enough, they offered me the job then. So back to the southeast again.
But only briefly at Colchester, though, yeah? So you signed for those in, or you became manager in about June 1994, and then come December time, you're not doing badly at Colchester, but there's no way you're ignoring a call from Ipswich, is there? Can you remember the story behind that,
Irene? Yeah, I mean, as you say, it was a short period, which I really enjoyed. We were doing well. I think we were fourth or fifth in the league. Things were going well. Ipswich, you know, were looking for a new manager. John Lyle had left, and I got the call, and I knew the people at Ipswich very well, knew the directors, John Kerr. I knew his dad very well. John, his dad, Willie Kerr, was a director when I was a player, and they lived, he used to live locally in Cumnock, in Ayrshire, around there. They were a farmer. Had a couple of interviews. Colchester gave me permission to speak to them. So once I spoke to them, and then they were keen to take me. It was an opportunity where, you know, it came up. My club was a player, and where we've lived for so long, there was no way I was going to turn it down.
100%. And the Colchester fans weren't, and what we now, 27 years on, they're still not particularly happy, are they?
Well, I've been back a few times. I went back when John McGill was a manager a few times. I did a lot of bit with John. Yeah. But I mean, it was the compensation was the problem. I mean, Ipswich offered them decent compensation. They wanted more. So and it eventually went to a tribunal, and they got worked for the same money that I think Ipswich were offering. But it was a big decision. Colchester fans weren't happy, but you know, it's my life, and it probably the only chance I get to go back to my club, and something I couldn't refuse. And it's not nice leaving somewhere where they've gave you the opportunity. But in trouble is in football. If it comes, you know, it's not a long period you're usually there for, and it's something you can't just turn your back on.
Well, that's right. You know, it's if the shoe was on the other foot, it only takes a handful of bad results, and then the decision's not yours to make, is it, I suppose?
Well, I mean, I think time and has told that at Colchester, isn't it? And,
yeah.
You know, I was, you know, very disappointed to let John McGill go, because he was doing a terrific job, and Gareth Williams, who was doing a terrific job. So, but that's football. As a manager, you know that can happen. And the other hand is, as a manager, if you've got the opportunity, I think you've got to take it.
Yeah, absolutely. So the Ipswich team that you inherited, they're in a bit of turmoil, weren't they? They were bottom of the league, 7-8 points adrift. Was it, you know, were you coming in with your eyes open? Was it a lost cause pretty much by the time that you joined us?
It was difficult.
Yeah.
It was a difficult time for the club, a difficult time to take over. There was not going to be any short-term answer. The Premiership is unforgiving. The club's done well. John Lyle's done well to get them into the Premiership, but you know, changes had to be made at some point, and so it was a test for myself, and I knew it would take time, because when you move into a club, normally you can't say, right, we're going to change 20 players here. Normally it doesn't, but it was a job where I wanted it. There's no way I was going to turn it down, and I was going to give it everything to make it right. And certainly that's what I tried to do.
Brilliant. Well, it didn't take long. I think only a handful of days after you joined, we went to Liverpool and got our first ever away victory, I think it was. Wasn't it Adam Tanner scoring 1-0? I think we won up there. We played Manchester United away. Do we want to talk about Manchester United?
Well, that was another difficult one, wasn't it? It was one where it can happen. We've seen it happen before in our Premiership. Man United were a fantastic team, and we were low in confidence and just kept conceding goals. And it was one of these where, as a manager, you've got to, you know, take it in the chin and move on. And after the game, I went and spoke to Sir Alec, and he was appreciated I come in and spat, and I had to move on from it. And it wasn't pleasant, but again, it was a test of your character, a test of your ability to pull it round after that.
Yeah, of course. So we ended up getting relegated, and then from there, it's, as you said, it's a rebuild, isn't it? Do you remember, were you under any particular restrictions or pressure to, you know, immediately get back up, or was it always agreed that it would be a slow build progress?
You can't say how long in football is going to take or how long you're going to get. So as I say, you've got to try your best. I think, you know, I knew the club, I knew most of all the people, and I was knew what I was looking for. And I think they appreciated that. And it was a case of, you know, trying to change things as quick as you can, trying to get your players in, trying to get a system. It's like anything. I think it was almost 100% we're going to get relegated. Yeah. So that wasn't a surprise. Okay, we lost that 9-0. That was a kick in the teeth, as you say, which you've got to, get back into work in order, because that takes time to recover. But I think you believe in what you had, you believe in your methods. I felt that I was brought up the best way, Ipswich, in the academy, and the Sir Bobby. I had my training routines, I had my standards, I knew what I was looking for. And it was a case of me, believing I could do it and getting things right.
Well, I say we'll try not to go into minute detail on each season, because we've only got a certain amount of time, but I think people will be fascinated about the build, really, of the squad over the course of the years, and, you know, the reasons behind it. So hopefully we'll do it justice. One of your first permanent signings in that new season, so 1995 going into 96, was Tony Mowbray in October. You knew what you were getting, didn't you, when you signed Tony Mowbray?
Yeah, well, I've seen Tony play a lot. I knew his character. I was looking for somebody to, you know, build round, somebody with a great character, somebody that had the ability and the know-how to teach players as well. I was wanting to bring young players through, so it's important you have the right role models and the right people with my sort of ideas. And then spoke to Tony. Tony was in a bit of a low at Celtic. Had a good chat with him. And I think Tony felt he just wanted a new start. And lucky enough for us, he decided to come. And, I don't think he regretted one moment of it.
No, I don't think he did. And as you said in our previous chat, when we were talking about your playing career, about just having the right sort of characters in and around the team, you know, not only to bond together, but also for the youngster to look up to. And you can't really have much of a better one than Tony Mowbray, can you, really?
Well, that's right. I think any team, you know, look at Sir Bobby's, you know, he brought experienced players in, you know, and Mick Mills, and, you know, you got Alan Hunter, who came into the team from Blackburn. And it's very important. And I've always enjoyed bringing young players through. And I think that was my strength. And I always liked to be out working, because even when I would play, any young players were about, I used to work with, and young players coming into the club. So that was something I always looked for. And I think for a club of size of Ipswich and the other clubs I've been at, it's so important. It's so important you bring these youngsters in and give them opportunity and work in their frailties and make them better. And then encourage it, and it encourages other youngsters, and it's great for the local community seeing these youngsters getting the opportunity, and that's what I had. You know, 15, you know, and I've actually played non-stop from 17, so I think that's the tradition at Ipswich, and that's something I wanted to keep going.
Well, it's perfect, because that self same season, it was James Scowcroft's debut season. It was Richard Wright's first real season. He played a couple of games the season before, but that was his first real season of men's football, and these guys were still youngsters, weren't they? And it's obviously, you talked about Sir Bobby in the previous chat about his, and as you said, that his trust in the youth, but that obviously rubbed off on your own management.
Definitely. I mean, that's so I always said the best players I signed was the youngsters, you know, the young players coming through, which I think for a club, that's how you're building. You're not building for the future. Just keep buying players, you know. and we didn't have the finances anyway, so you're buying players in, and sometimes those players you've got to sell, and that's the reality. Not them all, but at times you've got to sell a player now and again because they want to move, but you bring money back into the club so that you can get other players in.
Yeah.
So it's a case of that sort of, you know, enthusiasm to keep that academy going. And I was very close to the academy. I used to pick the academy director or the kind of people would recommend a player to come professional. And then I would go and look at them and then decide whether we were going to sign them professional. That doesn't happen anymore. You know, the first team manager doesn't really get involved where, like Sir Bobby and like myself, you'd hands-on with everything. And the academy was so important for me.
Yeah. Well, one of the features of our time in Division One was our runs that we went on from time to time. And I think this season we had a 10-match unbeaten run and finished seventh, just outside the playoffs. The following season, 96-97, we finished fourth and lost to Sheffield United on away goals. But again, we only lost four of our last 25 matches, you know. So again, it's these little runs that appear. Talking about youth, Kieran Dyer's debut season was that season. Mauricio Tirico won Player of the Year. Now, from one great fullback to another, who should know, what were his particular traits? And also, was it actually a pleasant surprise to have him on the books? Because, you know, he was a makeshift afterthought, really, of a bigger deal coming over from South America, wasn't he?
Yeah, I think Mauricio, like a number of foreign players, took a little time to settle. I know the beginning of pre-season, I think we played pre-season and get sent off or something, and Mauricio had a wee bit of a temper and he was quite strong. And I think my first season, you're thinking, well, is he going to be, you know, what we're looking for? But then once pre-season got over, he came into the team regular at left back and he was outstanding. Mauricio was a lovely lad, but he's very competitive. I'd say he would kick his granny if he could. He would really. But, you know, in the right way. Well, I don't know what the right way is. But he's very competitive. And when he got the ball, he never gave it away. You know, he was a great defender. And he, you know, and you talk about defending the back post. I mean, I used to think I was fairly good at defending the back post because as a defender, you're going to come against these 6'2" lads, 6'3". But if you can use your body to block them or stop them off, that's what you do. And Mauricio was great at that. But he was a very good footballer, never gave the ball away. He would come and join in. He got plenty of enthusiasm. He was a winner. He wanted the ball. And he was great for us. But it did take him a season to settle down. But after that first season, he never looked back. And then, of course, I think everybody was disappointed we went to Tottenham, including the whole staff and myself. But finances at that time, we had to sell a player. And unfortunately, Mauricio was the one that we had the offer for, and we had to let him go. But he was a terrific. You know, I've seen him a few times. He's a lovely fella, but he's a real winner.
Yeah, and he went on to play almost as many times, I think, for Spurs as he did for us. So you know, he had a wonderful career. Yeah, he's a lovely little player. But then, as you say, about having to sell to then reinvest and bits and pieces like that. Moving into the following season, which is 97-98, you then signed someone who's we spoke about just now, Mark, when we spoke about Tony Mowbray. Mark Venus came in the building and Steve Sedgley moved out. That wasn't a bad bit of business, was it?
Yeah, well, you know, the way it was, we had to bring some money in each season. And so you're wheeling and dealing. And Mark would watch, and he had a lovely left foot. Lovely left foot, very good in possession, which suits us. And Steve, I think, was, you know, he was getting a bit unsettled, and we had a good offer for him. So Steve went in one direction, and we were paid $150,000 for taking Vino. And I keep reminding him about that. You actually paid to take you, son. And he loved it. And Vino, I think we gave Vino wings because we wanted him to play. And that's what Matt went, yeah, I'm centre half, but I can play and I can do that. And so we had a little formation where we had Vino on the left, Tony Mowbray there, and eventually John McGree or whatever. And it worked well because he's, you know, great left foot, intelligent lad, wants to play all the time. And we had 150,000 in our pocket.
Yeah. And as you were saying about earlier when talking about Tony Mowbray, he and Mark Venus have, you know, formed a friendship which is still, and a partnership which is still going on to this day.
Yeah, it's great to see that. I'm really pleased. I've seen Tony a few months ago, and he's doing really well there.
And another guy that signed a similar sort of time was a gentleman called Matt Holland, and we've spoken to Matt. He's been on the pod and had a chat with us, and I've been to a Q&A with him as well, and he's joked that he was a particular favourite of yours after he after he joined, a little bit of a golden boy. But was that £800,000 well spent at the time for a 23-year-old? He was an older sort of stature in a 23-year-old's body, wasn't he?
Yeah, I remember going to watch him at Bournemouth. I went with Charlie Woods, and you go and watch, and you look at players, and we 15, 20 minutes go past, and I'm looking to Charlie. Half hour, I said, Charlie, he'll do me. His attitude and his commitment was first class. I think Mark played fullback as a youngster at West Ham. Shows you maybe didn't quite get the opportunity. Goes to Bournemouth, and he was Bournemouth's captain when he was 21, 22. Phenomenal character, 100%, leader, and we paid that for him, and well worth it. And he certainly did a fabulous job for us at Ipswich.
But again, as you say, it's another one we were talking about, Tony Mowbray. It's the characteristics, isn't it? Again, not just the playing side of things, it's that having that characteristics as well.
Yeah. Yeah, Matt did really well. And he actually, playing along people like Jim Magilton, who maybe come on to, made him a better player because it brought him out of his shell a little bit. You know, and we tried to work on his passing as well, you know, which improved. So it was a case of, he's good and he came from West Ham. But Matt, with that character and attitude, you'll get better. And he went from strength to strength.
That's funny enough, actually. You talked about the passing. It's reminded me in the Q&A I went to, he was talking about your golf club.
clubs on your foot.
Exactly that. It's exactly what he was talking about.
Well, Matt, when he first came, only had about three. And eventually got the lot.
Brilliant. Absolutely brilliant. Well, he actually won Player of the Year in his first season at the club as well, which, you know, just goes to show what an impact he had straight away. Another one that joined us in November, David Johnson. Now, crikey, over £1 million was a lot of money for us back then, wasn't it? But he was a great goal scorer at that level. But what was the story? Can you remember the story about Kevin Phillips and missing out on Kevin Phillips beforehand?
Well, I remember Kevin, again, I went to see him at Watford with Charlie. Really, another one with great attitude. I mean, little lad, very sharp, eye for goals, really liked him. We wanted to sign him, took him up to the office, talked about contracts. You know, we looked as if, you know, we could do it. But they were wanting a lot of money, and the only way we could get him was going to a tribunal. And I think the club felt the money they were asking for, and if it went to a tribunal, we probably couldn't afford it. So that, yeah. But Kevin, for me, was another Matt Holland. His attitude was tremendous and would have done a great job, but unfortunately, it didn't happen.
No.
David was always a goal scorer. He had a bad injury at Man United with his knee. He'd recovered for that. He was sharp, strong, knew where the net was. And as you say, did a really good job for us.
Yeah. And I think he got over 20 goals, I think, that season in the league alone, which is fantastic. And that wasn't just that season alone, was it? He was consistently banging in goals every single week. Fantastic player.
No, but I mean, any team need a goal scorer.
That's
something, you know, if you lose one, you need to keep looking to get in. And if you get that, and you know, you've got a chance of winning games. So it's a fine balance, and they're always the most expensive.
Yeah, but then you say we said about David Johnson's fee being over £1 million, but during the course of the season, as you're saying about having to bring in funds to release funds, you're selling Tony Vaughan, Craig Forrest. We spoke about Steve Sedgley. You're bringing in over £2.5 million, which again, this day and age, doesn't sound like an awful lot. Yeah. But back then, that's a good chunk of money to be able to, as you say, just reinvest and cover the gaps that you need to be filled.
I think the finance at those times were losing maybe about £1 million a year. You know, so it was a balance of the wages. You wanted a team, you want to get promotion, but you've got to balance it with £1 million. So whatever way you look at it, that's how it went. And we managed over those years to balance it very well by selling, but we also had money to bring back in. So if you sell somebody for four, you could pay three. You know, yeah. So it was a balancing act and something that's not easy, but we did quite well with it.
Yeah, brilliant. And we were talking about runs that we went on. I think this season in particular, our last 20 matches, we got 51 points from our last 20 matches, which is absolutely ridiculous, isn't it? I think of those, there were the five home games where we scored five goals in three consecutive home games, Huddersfield, team called Norwich and Oxford. But in terms of styles of play, that's every manager's dream, is to produce a team which can play like that on a consistent basis. We were purring, weren't we?
Yeah, I think managers judge by results, of course, but you've got to play a certain way. Our game was passing, because that's what we do in the training field. I couldn't coach any other way. So yeah. You know, people like your Mark Venuses and that coming to the club and making players better at passing the ball was so important. And you have that belief the way you play will win games. You're not good playing that way if you can't win a game. So you've got to introduce passing, so there's an end product, there's an end result, there's a shot, there's a cross, there's a header, you know, there's a side foot into the net. So you're working in a shape, a plan, a way of playing, but there's got to be an end result.
Yeah. So we finished fifth, unfortunately lost 2-0 to Charlton on aggregate, I think, in the playoffs, 2-1-0 defeats. In the playoffs, but again, it's another build, isn't it? And the following, 1998, that's when we sold Tirico. We also sold Alex Matthey, brought in another £2.5 million, and that enabled you to buy Jim McGilton, who signed in March, and he's another guy who's, well, you know, you and I have spoken for an hour about your playing career. We're going to speak for about an hour about your management career. Jim McGilton, I think, spoke to us for about 12 or 13 hours about one particular game, I think. But what did he bring to the squad? And as you said before, how well did he dovetail with Matt Holland?
Yeah, I mean, Jim was a footballer. Jim was very infectious, enthusiasm, and actually pulled the ball out of people. You talk about Jim. Jim never stopped speaking on the pitch, you know. And he would say to Matt, "Get the ball and give it to me, Matt," or "Get the ball and give it to me." So your style of play is going to come through your playmaker, like Jim. And Jim was so good at getting the ball. You know, he would take up angles and get the ball, or if it's a 1 yard pass or a 5 yard pass, he would get people on the ball. So they get him on the ball to give it to Jim, and then go forward. So his enthusiasm and his knowledge made a big influence to the team. Like I said, it improved Matt Holland. It would help the strikers. It would help the back four to give somebody the ball, because he was always available. And that was Jim's game. And he had great vision and great touch, you know. And Jim made you play. And that was so important for our style of play.
And when we spoke to David Johnson, funnily enough, we spoke to him, and he said that even in training, having Jim McGilton in training just lifted everyone else's, his expectations of everyone else were up. So therefore, you had to raise your game even in the training, which then transfers itself onto the pitch, doesn't it?
Yeah, it's habits. Jim couldn't do anything else. You know, Jim wanted the ball. He wanted to play, whether it was head tennis before you actually trained, or, you know, or having a meal in, you know, in the restaurant. You would hear Jim yapping away and with an Irish accent, and, you know, it was infectious. And that's, you know, and he loved football. And he was at Sheffield Wednesday, and he wasn't in the team.
Yeah.
And Jim was like, you know, he wanted to get out and play football. He just wanted the ball and wanted to play. And both of those two were very close as well. They're always arguing with each other, mind you, you know, and Vino's never wrong. So, and Jim's never wrong. And as a manager, it was a little bit of a subtle touch because you could easily, you know, fall out with either two of them, especially Jim. But Jim was great. He was football mad. He wanted to play, and you let him play and let him whatever was fantastic. And we sort of dovetailed well.
Yeah, fantastically. And again, yet another character to bring into squad. We're now building. You've got a good, solid core of characters, as we were saying before. So we finished third by 1 point. That was to Bradford. Paul Jules Bradford, I believe.
Yeah.
And lost to Bolton on away goals in the playoffs, which was Kieran Dyer got two goals, and that was his last match, which we'll come to in a sec. But were there any thoughts after, you know, another heartbreak in the playoffs? Were there any thoughts that promotion this is never going to happen, or was there any pressure from David Sheepshanks or above that, you know, we need to start getting over the line?
When I look back, there was disappointment, but there was a belief. David was tremendous. David loved Ipswich. He loved his football. Very knowledgeable about the game. Never tried to interfere at all. Would be there for you to speak to things about and anything about football, you know, but was great support. And I'm sure, you know, some of the fans, whatever, were disappointed. But I felt that there was always a belief in the fans and the club that we could get it right. And, you know, and David and the board knew that we didn't have the resources and we had to sell, but knew that we were so close. So that was great for me as a manager to have full responsibility to do things and nobody trying to, you know, stop this or stop that, and just give you encouragement. And you know, and John Kerr was the same when I took over. So that network of players was the same behind the scenes.
Yeah,
there wasn't a divide between the academy. You know, you didn't have a divide between the academy and the first team, or the board, or the directors. So we were all one, and that made it so strong, and it made me and all my coaching staff feel we'll keep going here. And the fans thought, we've got a chance. And if you think, well, we've had three playoffs, we've had some great runs, we've brought some really good players in, we've just missed out, and let's go again and do it the next time. And that's what we did.
Yeah, absolutely. I don't remember there being any sort of grumbles in the stands or anything like that. As you say, exactly. It just seemed to be a big united club, really, that it was eventually, hopefully, going to happen. But you said earlier about not being able to coach it any different way, but was there ever any thought about changing a philosophy in terms of, you know, mixing it up and going long or something like that, or was it going to be my way, we're going to win it this way?
Well, my way is not always the same way. Bobby Robson's way wasn't always the same way. What you're trying to do is improve players and get a system which suits that group of players. You know, but you've still got to be able to pass the ball, whether it's short or long. You know, you've still got to be able to control it.
You'd be surprised some of the players I've seen in the last few years. But yeah, no, I take exactly what you mean.
Well, I mean, you're not in our team because we did it every day. We did it every day. You know, we worked at it every day. So, you know, whether some players think, oh, well, we did the same training, repetition. So you've got the belief of passing the ball, getting the ball, Vino, Jim McGilton, whatever, get it to feet, play. So you just keep it going. So sometimes you've got to tweak it. Sometimes I played with a back three, sometimes with a back four. So I could change it. So the players could adjust to systems. There's nothing wrong with systems, but you've got to adjust and bring the best. Sometimes the opposition are played with one up front, I would maybe go with a back four. If there were two strikers, it would be back three. So I was able to change it because of the players I've got, you know. So it's not black and white. So you've got to adjust. But your actual philosophy of having the basics in the game never changes. And that's down to a lot of repetition and doing it and being positive, you know. Positive where the way you play, not going back square across, where I think times you think, come on, you know, you've got to have the vision to know to turn it. You know, I always think about when Paul Scholes, I mean, you know, forward, Jim Magilton, he'd get the ball, he would want to pass it forwards, you know, not kick it forward, but go and pass it forwards, because you've got the vision before you get the ball. There's too many players just pass it back because they don't have the vision to know what's around them, you know. That's what I think. Well, why did you not turn with the ball there?
Yeah.
You know, and that's someone coaching, I'd be going, hey, come on. You don't just turn with the ball and play and slide it forward. So that's the philosophy. So you're not changing it. You need the basics, but it can change depending on your personnel and who you're against.
And you say about systems, different system, and moving from back threes to back fours or fives, whatever. But, and we'll talk about some players in a sec. You need to have this, and that's during matches as well, you know, in game. And you need to have intelligent players to allow you to do that, don't you? And I say we'll chat about a couple of those in a sec. So in 1999, 2000 is where we're up to now. We sold Kieran Dyer for £6 million in the summer. He was always going to leave, wasn't he? He was too good to be playing Division One football at that time, wasn't he?
Yeah, I mean, Kieran had great ability, great energy. You know, he'll tell you he played all over the park for us because he was so good. So there was, you know, it's like most players, there comes a time where they want to go or the club comes in for them. And that was Kieran. And Kieran had, you know, knew Sir Bobby, of course, and Charlie. So they were very keen to take them, and it was a case of we couldn't turn that offer down, and we had to build again, and it was good for Kieran because he wanted to move on into the Premiership. We were in the Premiership there to a big club like Newcastle. So unfortunately, that is life, and Kieran, you know, learned his trade at Ipswich, which I still speak to him now and again. I think he enjoyed that, and it was a big challenge for him going to Newcastle.
But again, it lets you build the squad and add to the squad and supplement the squad. So you've got Jermaine Wright coming in, John McGrill you spoke about earlier, Gary Crofts coming in. And it's sort of those lot of unsung players, but those adding to people like Jamie Clapham, who was already in the team. They're the sort of players that allow you to move systems during a match. They're clever players, intelligent guys who can play a number of positions you know, at the flick of a switch. Yeah.
It's important you're not trying to get players something they can't do. Yeah, that's the worst scenario. You know, these players can, you say, they can drop back or they can push into midfield or they can play with free. So they're intelligent players and they've got the capability to do that. So as a manager, that's great. Sometimes you don't have that, so you can't change it. So, but when those type of players are, and we could adjust and it works well as time went on.
And then in February, we signed a guy called Marcus Stewart. How on earth did you manage to persuade Huddersfield, who were, I think, one position below us in fifth, we were fourth? How on earth did we manage to prize him away from them?
Well, I think you need to ask them that. But, you know, he was fantastic for us. Really, when you look at his goal scoring, he's always a clever mover. His runs, his how he gets away from defenders in the box. He will go one way then the other way. Can score with his head, score with either foot. He was a fantastic buy for us, and he played a big part, of course, on promotion that year. And something you need. It's not easy to get. We come up with the money to Huddersfield and accepted, and that was good for us.
Yeah, brilliant. Another player we had on loan that year was Martin Reusser, who technically must be right up there in terms of his ability, but an interesting character. Was he the most dedicated of trainers as well?
Martin was a great lad. He was enthusiastic, great feet, great ability. And it was one of these, the pace of the game in England is very difficult for. And if you look at Dutch football compared to English, it's completely different. But Martin certainly did really well for us. You need players who can come on, which he did a few times near the end of that season, during that season, and do well for you. And he did. So there's no doubt that you knew that you had Martin there. You know, you might start with him, then again, he would be very good off the bench because of his ability to score goals and the talent he's got.
Yeah, and he's another guy that's gone into coaching, isn't he? He's doing well in the Dutch setup in terms of the coaching side of things.
He's a smashing lad, always smile on his face and enthusiastic. And I hope he does well.
And there it is. That's as good as it gets on this stage. Nissan Townstar EV strikes again. It's an unstoppable van. Unstoppable!
Look, just fantastic. You can actually see the ProPilot technology in action. Effortless parallel parking.
It moves with all the confidence that comes with a 5-year warranty.
And with a bench full of all-star van experts, there's real strength in depth here.
That's all-star quality.
Search Nissan Townstar EV and visit your local all-star van centre to see for yourself.
Terms and conditions apply. 5 years or 100,000 miles, whichever comes first.
ProPilot is an advanced driver assist technology. Driver's responsibility to stay alert, drive safely, and control vehicle at all times.
Away days are great, but there's nothing quite like home comforts. The same goes for McDonald's. Maximize your home advantage with McDelivery. You in? Order now on the McDonald's app. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee, and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Whether you need a VPN to protect you while online, to allow you to change your worldwide location virtually, or maybe a bit of both, NordVPN gives you the freedom to do so. NordVPN also allows you to stream TV shows, films, and even sporting events which aren't available in your local region, changing to a country which is showing that content, meaning you can switch as seamlessly as a Kira McKenna in-game tactical tweak with just one click. But that's not all. NordVPN can also look after you while online, preventing your card details and passwords from falling into the wrong hands, safeguarding your personal and sensitive information from harm. Think of it as a cyber Sam Morsey, offering protection to your own personal back four, but with far fewer yellow cards. NordVPN is available for the price of a cup of Bovril per month, and one account can be used across 6 different devices. Visit nordvpn.com/Blue Monday or click the link in the podcast description for more information about the offer and a risk-free 30-day money-back guarantee trial period. You'll also be helping out the pod by subscribing.
Yeah. And we only lost four of our, and again, another run, lost four of our last 28 games, finished in third, 2 points behind Man City, only 4 points off the top. So we head up onto the into the Bolton semi-finals. 35 minutes into the first leg, George, we've lost Tony Mowbray. He's gone off injured. David Johnson's gone off injured. We're 2-0 down. It's all over, isn't it, for another year?
Well, yeah, it was beginning to look that way. But in football, it can change quickly. And we, you know, Marcus come up trumps. And that's what you need. You need goal scorers. You need people to change their ways. Things can go against you. But we had plenty of things that went against us in the other playoffs over the years. And you think, to do that, to be where we were in the fourth year again, was phenomenal. All the success and win rates we had. But we needed somebody to give us a chance. So once we got the first goal, we think, oh, well, let's get them back to Portman Road and Marcus come up trumps again.
Yeah, he repaid the outlay in February, certainly, didn't he? And it's, in terms of that second leg, have you ever been involved in a crazier match than the Bolton second leg? They were all, you know, they were all correct refereeing decisions as far as we're concerned. But in terms of the toing and froing of the match, it was a crazy old night, wasn't it?
Well, I don't think Sam Allardyce, but we still hardly spoke to him since, I think.
But, oh, well.
When I look it back, I think definitely two were clear cut. One was maybe 50-50, but end of the day, you know, we won it. We got through, we played well on the night. Jim McGilton was unbelievable. And thankfully, we got the breaks and the decisions were eventually over those years we deserved and managed to win it. But it was a game I don't think you'll ever see the likes of ever again at Portman Road, with the emotions and standing there and watching extra time. really, it was stressful to watch, and I think the crowd will never forget that game.
I think it's top of the list on so many fans' top games they've ever seen. Understandably, it's a ridiculous game, and then obviously we move on to Wembley, which eventually, you know, the scoreline looks okay, doesn't it? But there were a few heart-stopping moments over the course of the day and the course of the game. What, have you got any particular memories of the final itself? Having, you know, there can't be many people who've played for a club and managed the same club at Wembley.
Yeah. Oh, it was a very emotional day, of course. I mean, I think both sets of fans were fantastic. It was a great day, great game to watch for the neutrals. A game it seesawed a little bit, kind of went one way and then another. Penalty save was maybe a crucial one for us, but on the day I thought we deserved it. Played well. I had to change David Johnson fairly early on, and Richard Naylor come on and was unbelievable. Tony Mowbray getting his header. Marcus, of course, great goal as well, with Bam Bam making the cross, and Martin Roussa finishing it all off in Martin Roussa style. And I can remember jumping up with my best man, best friend Dale. So those memories will always stay by me.
Yeah, fantastic. Absolutely brilliant. So that's it then. We're in the Premier League, or the Premiership. I don't know what it was called back then. Any fears going into the season of Premier League? We only really signed Martin Reuter and Herman Hreidis, and so you're keeping keeping the squad together, just adding very, very little to it.
Yeah, well, with the playoffs, you didn't have much time to think about it.
Yeah, of course.
Straight in. You're going into it and we're really, not really apprehension, but not sure what's going to happen. In the Premiership, we've got a strong squad, which has been built up over 4 or 5 years. Settled squad, added Herman to it, really. And really see how it went. Just play the same. We didn't play any different. We kept with principles, with standards, with beliefs, and went into it. And I think it was a case. I think Tony had retired.
Yeah.
And we sort of changed it a little bit. We had Titus Bramble coming into that sort of position, a young lad, 17. To play in the squad. So really, it was see how we go, and it was going to be important we got off to a half-decent start, because I think when it's in the Premiership, if you fall behind, it's very difficult. And so we wanted to get a good start, and we looked at some of the fixtures dauntingly, really, thinking, oh, Arsenal and Man U. But we weren't wary, but it was one of these things, how can we cope and just go and do our best?
And how important was that? I think the first home game of the season was the Manchester United draw, when they had, you know, they got Beckham, Keane, Scholes and Giggs in their team. But just to give you that, just to settle some nerves and just give you a bit of confidence that actually we can hold our own here.
Yeah, I remember the first few games. Man United was a big game and Arsenal was a big game, and we drew with both of them.
Yeah.
And thought, well, they're the two of the best teams in the league and we've coped with them. So let's push on. And take one game at a time. You've got to do that in the Premiership, and the players showed that they can cope with it. They could cope with your Beckhams and your top players, and perform very well. We still had a lot of confidence, we felt, from there, and kept the same way going. And the players, you know, like Titus that came in, did really well.
Yeah, and Matt Holland references the 3-0 away at Everton as one of his standout games that year, that season, and being applauded off by the Everton fans at the end of the match.
Yeah, I remember that game well, because it was a game because Walter Smith was a manager, and I know Walter, a Scottish lad, of course, fairly well. And it was a game where, you know, we set our stall down, but we knew we could change it. So as the game goes on, Walter, I think we took the lead or whatever, it wasn't going well for them, so he changed it. And then when he changed it, I changed it, And this went on, and we went to 2-0. And then it went on, and it went to 3-0. And then he looked over to me, and he sort of went, he came after again. Yeah, every time you've changed it, and you were better. And going to Everton to outplay them and manipulating the team, which we did.
Yeah.
And I remember Matt coming in at half-time laughing, Matt Holland. And I said to Matt, what are you laughing at? You know, we're winning, and we're quite, he says, Gaza. He says, why are you losing the Gaza? I said, he keeps looking at his shirt. And I said to him, why are you looking at your shirt? He says, well, I've got your number on my shirt, so I remember who to mark here.
The number 8.
He actually wrote number 8, Matt Holland, in his shirt, so he remembered who to mark from a corner.
Yeah, bless him. Bless him. Yeah, the number 8's a bit too difficult, poor old Gaza. So, December, we beat Liverpool away again. Marcus Stewart that time. Draw at home to Chelsea, beat Tottenham 3-0. You know, these are all solid Premier League teams that we're not brushing aside, but we know we're getting some great results against them. Southampton 3-0 away, the hat-trick by Marcus Stewart.
Yeah.
Should he have been called up for England? He was good enough for England, wasn't he, at that point in time?
Well, his record spoke for itself, but there was a lot of decent strikers in England, of course, you know,
yeah.
Shearer and all that, but his record was second to none. You know, his goal scoring in that time of the season and that year was as good as any, so he could easily have been called up and maybe deserved to.
Yeah. So in terms of the squad itself, was there any like disbelief that this was going so well? The morale must have been absolutely through the roof. You know, the guys must have been buzzing in training. The team's just on a roll. I suppose it just ends up coaching itself and picking itself, does it?
No, well, it doesn't, because you've got to keep the same standards and you've got to keep on top of them and you've got to keep the same beliefs, you know, and we always believe it's working, like, you know. Usually after a session, we always, players like I did, whatever, doing extra, and Tony Mowbray would go and work a bit with a back three, a back four. I would say to Tony, go and do a little bit with them, and so Tony would keep on top of that, and we're working on this. So, you've got to keep that continuity going. You can't just take your foot off the pedal. We didn't, you know, when I was a player over those years, and we tried to keep it going. We know that we didn't have a big squad, so we're fairly fortunate with injuries, we didn't have too many, and the first season in the Premiership certainly gave everybody a lift, you know. Yeah. And it was one of these, wow, we're in the Premiership, wow, we're winning, and everybody was felt 10 foot tall, but and it was a case of keeping it going.
Yeah, it just goes to show, doesn't it, I suppose, that momentum, you know, people use the word momentum all the time, doesn't it, and having, as you said at the very beginning, having not got off to a bad start, you know, you just start to build and build over the course of a season, don't you? It's a remarkable thing. It's
yes.
Confidence.
Confidence is not most. That's why you've got to have a strong character, so that when things are not going well, you don't lose it all. I mean, you're seeing now players like in Man United, and you think, poor lad's lost his confidence. And
yeah,
when that happens, you know, you lose, you know, all your ability. So that confidence is got to try and stick there all the time.
And famously, we finished fifth with 3 points off of third and 4 points off of second, narrowly missing out on the Champions League, remarkably. And yourself, personally, you win the Premier League Manager of the Year, but you win the League Managers Association Manager of the Year, the best manager in the country. It doesn't get much better than that, does it?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a phenomenal, it's still the best finish from any team. It's got promotion, but I still think sometimes the team doesn't get, you know, the recognition it deserves, you know. Of course, Bobby's teams were great, but, for, you know, to finish fifth that period, just been there, it was a phenomenal achievement, and it was a great team. It was a fantastic team, and, you know, a team that was built up, and a team that played great football, you know, and it wasn't luck, and we were in sort of third position for a lot of that season.
Yeah.
So, it was something, everything went right, and it was, you know, all those years of building and trying to improve, and players reached a peak, you know.
Yeah.
They reached the peak, and the first season, I think, the Premiership is great, you know, because you're at your peak and you want to stay there. You know, to keep it there, it's sometimes not so easy.
Yeah, well, as we'll find out. And as your stock was so high, were there any ever whispers from anywhere else, any other clubs?
Yeah, I could have moved to other clubs.
Yeah.
But I didn't want to move. Why do I want to move? It's my club. You know, it's my player. I love David Sheepshanks, the board, everybody. Was great. I enjoyed working with the group of players we had. No thought of moving. As I say, maybe I should have done.
well, unfortunately,
but there you go. That's decision life. I wanted to stay and I did.
Yeah, exactly. And unfortunately, we'll have to talk about it. So, summertime, we sold, as you said earlier, Richard Wright went off to Arsenal. Jamie Scowcroft went off to Leicester. We recoup £9 million for those two guys. And we brought in a couple of players who weren't probably normal Ipswich transfers, should we say? Matteo Cerini and Fanidi George. How did those transfers come about? Because, you know, as you showed with the Herman Hreiðarsson signing, it was guys who'd already sort of knew the league and knew the country, etc., knew the football. But how did the Cerini and Fanidi George transfers?
Yeah, I mean, Richard Wright left, which we didn't. I said previously, he had money in his. He could move to. He went to Arsenal. That was a big loss. We tried to get a couple of other players, goalkeepers in England. One from Arsenal, get injured, so we couldn't get him.
There was Mark Poom, was it, from Derby as well?
Yeah, he had a wrist injury.
Okay.
I tried to sign him, but he was injured, and I've always liked him. And then I went abroad and watched the keeper, and then he did well on the day. He came back, we signed him. He did well for a month, and then I think his attitudes and his, you know, he kept blaming everybody, and it didn't work out. So it wasn't a good buy. I took a risk where others I was trying to get, I couldn't. So, you know, I don't think everybody's 100% there, but it wasn't, it didn't work out. Serena didn't work out, and he wasn't a great for the team around the dressing room. From there, Fanidi George, everybody talks about it. And Fanidi, I seen over and playing for Mallorca. We were looking for a wide midfield player that could score goals. And I thought Fanidi could do that with his history, and I spoke to a few people over in Holland as well. And he came in, and he started off really well, but eventually couldn't cope with the pace of the game. The pace was too quick for him, you know. People say, did I know his age before I bought him? But I don't think he knew his age. Anyway, so it didn't work out. But he did have the ability. So some of those signings didn't work out the way we'd hoped to improve the team. I think if we'd have finished... if we'd have got relegated the first season, third bottom, like we did that season, nobody said, oh, we're unlucky. But because we finished fifth, I tried to improve the team.
Yeah.
With better players and foreign players, and it didn't work out that way. And some of the players who did really well on the first season found it difficult to keep to that level the second season. Plus, it's a European scenario. Yeah. Where you're playing on a Thursday and then playing the Sunday and then the Thursday. And we did very well in Europe. We won in Moscow. We won in Sweden, you know. Yeah. We beat Milan the first 1-0 and then lost away. So that went well, but it definitely took his eye off the ball for the games.
Yeah.
You know, games in the Premiership. And we didn't have the strength of squad that your top five and six normally do. So it was a mixture of, you know, some of the buys didn't work out. One or two players couldn't quite perform, which have done fantastic the year before. The European scenario didn't work. And we finished, as I say, third bottom in the last game against Liverpool to get relegated, which was a big blow considering the season before. For the club, but the Premiership is a very, very difficult league, and the European scenario didn't do us any favours.
Yeah, well, exactly. As you say, it's as we spoke about when we were talking about the first year up there, in terms of getting on a roll and getting the confidence under your belt early doors, that is something that unfortunately we weren't able to do in that season, was it? I think we got the Derby win where Fanidi played spectacularly well in that home game. That was pretty much the one win in the first two or three months. As you say, it's if you get on the slip side, you know, on the flip side of the good roll, it's trying to get it back from a bad one, yeah. I suppose, isn't it?
Yeah, and you know, people, you know, we did well in Europe, but that didn't come into consideration. But there's a lot of fans in there who still talk about going over to Milan and
100%, yeah.
I know, you know, the Moscow. Not many teams win in Moscow, but yeah, as I say, it was very disappointing, and like anybody, but it is a league where you've really got to be on top of everything to compete in.
Yeah, and funnily enough, we're talking about Inter Milan. When I saw you at a Q&A you did in my neck of the woods in September time, I think it was, there was a Colts United fan in the crowd, and he asked you with a straight face. He asked you if you'd had any regrets about leaving Colts United. you know, when you were standing on the touchline at the San Siro watching your team, you know, 1-0 up from the first leg, were the thoughts of Lea Road regret in the back of your mind?
Well, you've got to say he's a true Colchester fan. He's blinded by it. You know, well, you can't knock it, can you?
No, absolutely.
But in my perspective, it's sort of, you know, one I'll never forget, and one, I'll, you know, when I walk about town, I live in Ipswich, when I walk about town, everybody's talking about, you know, playoffs, talking about, you know, Europe, and it's memories that certainly they won't forget.
Yeah, brilliant. Brilliant. So in terms of main regrets, you know, with 2020 hindsight, would you have done anything different? Were there any transfers that almost got over the line and we weren't quite able to, you know, to seal the deal on? I know the guy Cashlaw, wasn't it, from Coventry, was he at the time, or Southampton maybe?
He ended up
joining Villa, I think, last moment. But yeah. And you said about Mark Poom as well. But they're the sort of players that already played in England, hadn't they? They'd already used to the football, etc.
Yeah, and second thoughts, you think, well, I shouldn't have taken that gamble. And that's right. You know, I shouldn't have took that gamble and moved on to somebody who's played. But, you know, when you're trying, when I'm trying to improve a team that finished fifth, you're trying to bring somebody with international maybe experience, you know?
Yeah.
Fanini George, who played in the world, you know, there, who's been Ajax, and, you know, the Italian goalkeeper, which didn't work out. I talked about Mauricio. It took a season for them or so to settle down.
Yeah.
It takes longer for them to settle down in this country. But as I say, I hold my hands up as far as those transfers not going right.
But I think you had plenty of credit in the bank, though.
But over the years, I think if you look at the transfers up to that season, they did fantastically well.
Yeah, absolutely, 100%. And then a sort of double whammy, wasn't it, in that summer, in that there was the, was it ITV Sport or Digital collapsed, or one of the sports channels collapsed, didn't it?
Yeah.
We were pretty much immediately hit by financial issues, weren't we? So Titus went off to Newcastle. I think Cerini went back out on loan to Italy. But the season didn't start off too badly in Division One again. We won first two matches, but they lost a few on the trot. And then come Grimsby, we were 3-0 loss to Grimsby, and that was it. Were you confident you could have still turned things round or had things run the course?
I think so. I mean, when you look the divisions, teams that get relegated usually struggle early on. And we'd still have a fairly strong team. Again, we were playing in Europe. We're playing Thursday again. Thursday, we're off to Europe, and then playing on a Sunday early on in that season, and we were still in it. We won games and that. So it wasn't a great start, but you know, that was there. I mean, I think it was a big shock for a lot of the squad getting relegated, and it was going to take time to turn around. But sometimes in football, you don't get it. But I was still confident that it was early on the season. It was only October. they're still playing in Europe, and certainly it was plenty of time to turn it around.
That's ridiculous, wasn't it? We were through the Fair Play League, we managed to get back into Europe again. It must have been a bizarrely just a one thing that we didn't particularly require, wasn't it?
I've always believed in a disciplined team, you know, wherever I've been, and I think we've got Europe because of that, because we're a disciplined team.
Yeah,
that's something I was brought up with Bobby Robson and the coaches. You've got to be disciplined, and that's the way our teams were.
So having walked in the door as a 38-year-old, relatively inexperienced manager, to leave having managed over 400 games and, as I said before, the third most matches in our history, must give you, well, have given and still give you just tremendous pride.
Yeah, I mean, I was very disappointed, like everybody else, about the club getting into administration, you know, and the club brigade. But, you know, there was a conversation in the summer where, you know, we... to sell players, you know, and when before I've always had to sell players, and I think you say Tigers went, and there was offers for Matt Holland and Herman and Aridis and a couple of others we could have sold to stop it. It wouldn't have happened. But I think the new transfer window come in as well. Of course, when they didn't decide not to sell the players, which they could have done, which I've done all my career, it was too late then for the club. So that was a big disappointment for me because I was, you know, I couldn't believe it when I heard about it. So that was a difficult one for the club, which could have been avoided. No doubt about that. But that's life. And with, as you say, with the money not coming in as much and with the transfer window coming in, it made things difficult for the club.
So before we briefly go over the rest of your management career, have you ever been close to coming back since?
No, I mean, no, I've been, you know, a number of clubs which I've enjoyed. I always wanted to come back and live here. But, you know, it was one of these where you leave a club and then you look to go to different clubs. And I've never had the offer to come back here. So that hasn't happened.
So as you say about other clubs, you had two full seasons at Derby and got those to fourth, where they were relegation candidates the season before. You got them into the playoffs.
That was great. I really enjoyed that. And the back room wasn't so great while I left. It was a bit frightening, really. And then two of the executives ended up in prison. But I really enjoyed it there. That's a very similar club to Ipswich. Bringing young players through, Tom Huddleston. You say they were. I took the caretaker job on first and kept them up, and then we end up getting the playoffs two seasons later, and we actually, you know, got very close to it. So. I really enjoyed it there, and a lovely club, and the fans were fantastic there.
Yeah, they're in a spot of bother now, unfortunately, aren't they, as well?
Yeah.
And you say about backroom at Derby, you moved on to Hearts, and crikey, what a start. You had you won 8 of your first 10 league games. You were flying at the top of the league. But yeah, there was an issue, was there, in a bit of meddling, was there, in the background?
Yeah, I mean, I loved it there. Fans were great. I mean, unbelievable, the fans. And it was strange to start with because didn't have a strong squad. And I found it difficult to sign a player because Mr. Robinoff, he couldn't really contact, or he would say, no, if I want a player now, he's not good enough. And, you know. So it was difficult. My chief scout, Simon Hunt, knew some agents over who spoke Russian, and then eventually got people like Rudy Scaccio and that in there, and got a good team together. And then he was still not happy with it, and he didn't like this. And then he brought this player in who came for a trial, and I said, no, he's not good enough. The players don't like him either, whatever. And then he turned up the next day on a 3-year contract. So it was a difficult one, but it wasn't going to be right. And then I left. haven't done so well, and so it was short and sweet, I would say.
Yeah, and it's still spoken about by the Hearts fans now in terms of what could have been.
It was a great rapport, and we had the chance of winning the league with the team we had, and we had some good, very good professionals. It was great to see Craig Gordon still playing away there, and he was the best goalkeeper I ever worked with, and unbelievable how he stopped playing for about 3 years, and then he's came back, and he's going to be playing, with Scotland in the World Cup. So and he's still playing with Hearts. So no, he's great. But it was a great club, great. It was never going to last long, put it that way. I've been brought up a certain way of being a manager. Times have changed, even a lot of clubs now, of controlling it, and that wasn't going to happen.
But then you moved on to Southampton a couple of months later, and Sir Clive Woodward was there at the time. What was his involvement? Because it was at a time where he was of the opinion that you could take rugby or just sport characteristics and take it into any sort of sport around.
Yeah. Again, I'd really enjoy it. Rupert Lowe was the chairman, and he brought the youth system and worked really hard with it. And we brought some great players through. I mean, Gareth Bale, Adam Lallana, David Best, David McGoldrick, I gave David his debut at 17, along with Adam Lallana. A number of others, and Gareth, and he did well, and he knew Woodworth well, Clive Woodworth, and he said, "Well, we'd like to bring him in." I said, "Fine, great," and he was a really nice fella, Clive. He had the belief in bringing certain people in for certain things, for your diet, fitness, okay. So bringing the best people in. And I think he was keen in doing a bit of coaching and things like that. But every time I asked him, he went, "No, I think I'll leave that alone, Josh."
Really?
So he never interfered, but he was really good, and he had some really good ideas. He was only there for a short period because Rupert Lowe left. He didn't go on with the fans, and then I had two or three other chairmen there who were really nice people, good people, and enjoyed it. And as I say, the youth policy and the kids that were brought through again suited me, Gareth was fantastic,
Well, so let's talk about Gareth Bale then. So, how easy is it to spot a player in their early years and know that, obviously they've got to put in the hard work themselves, but how easy is it to spot that player is going to make it?
Yeah, right. I mean, a lot of these good players in the academy, people with the academy know about, You can see, the coaches that can see guy, and Southampton, really good academy. So it's a case of once you have them, it's getting the best out of them. And some people say, "Oh, well, just play them two or three times and give them a rest. You don't want to play them for too long and all that." Well, I'm not a believer in that. Of course, you've got to keep an eye on them. But once they're there and they're still looking good, you want to work with them, give them that. I was given the opportunity to play regular. And Gareth was the same. He was only 17, brought him in, never looked back. I mean, his attacking fullback and a left foot then, he was second to none. I mean, when you played the opposition used to mark him to stop him getting the ball because he was so good and he was so quick. So he was at left back there and he was in unfathomable talent. Working hard, he was always last off the training ground, working in his free kicks. Great vision, great left foot, gets forward. Maybe wasn't the toughest lad in the world as far as tackling that, but brilliant at going forward. And everybody's seen how it went. And I actually went to Tottenham, and he struggled the first few months, 6 months, because I was Scotland manager and watched him a few times, and he was struggling a little bit. Then he moved forward, then he took off again. But he was great to work with, along with Adam Lallana, was a wee bit behind. He wasn't quite ready at 17. I'm still talking about 17. He got the first team at 18, and David McGoldrick was the same. But these are young kids, you give the opportunity. People say, "Oh, he's young, he's only 21. Come on. He's not that young. I'm a believer. Once they get in that age, if they're not playing regular in the first team, they need to be outlawed or they'd be in your first team. So, you're talking about some good top quality players there who I've enjoyed developing, and they've all international players, which is great to see. And we had Kieran and Titus, all internationals now. You know, not just ordinary players, international players who've came through the youth academy at Ipswich, and Southampton, where I've been working.
Yeah, it must just give you immense pride that to pick up these, as you say, 17-year-olds and see them just progress and progress and progress to the height, the very, very highest level.
Tom Huddleston was the same. You know, he was a Glenn Hoddle passer the ball. You know, I seen him come on in Silver Hall the other day.
He's still playing, yeah.
He's a great pass. I used to enjoy watching him. You know, sometimes you stand back and think, oh, how did he see that pass? And I loved that, you know. Great vision. I used to work in drills to give people better vision passing the ball. You know, it doesn't just come. Sometimes you've got to give them drills so they can see different passes of the ball, which is important.
Fantastic. Absolutely brilliant. Well, as you said about being manager of Scotland, you have obviously had your period up there. It must, again, massive pride to manage your country. Yeah. How easy was it to persuade Terry Butcher to join you?
Yeah, I mean, leaving Southampton wasn't easy because, you know, but they had some problems because I said they had two or three different chairmen. You think, well, do I stay?
Yeah.
I got on well with them, with the chief exec, Lee Hoos, who's at Queen's Park Rangers now, going really well with them. But I thought, if you're going to be offered the job, I've got to go for it.
Yeah.
And it's a different type of job where you're not in the coaching role much. You only have them a few times, you know, every month. And I found it difficult, you know. And you see, I wanted some people I knew. Terry had been in Scotland with Rangers for a long time. He's a good friend of mine. He was brought up with me at Portman Road. So, you know, I wanted Terry to, I think he thought twice about it. but he accepted it. And, you know, so that was great. But it was a difficult job. And one, it wasn't really great for me to get enjoyment working with players in the training grounds, and because you can't change them. You're not actually working at the technique once every 2 months. That was difficult, and the results didn't go great. My first game against one of the first games against Argentina, and Maradona was the manager.
Oh, right.
So you can imagine what the Scottish press was saying to Terry about that. They're rubbing that in, bless them. So, you know, so it was difficult, and the results didn't go well. And we, you know, my wife and myself, we moved up to Edinburgh, which we really enjoyed. So that was good, but it wasn't something I enjoyed getting out in the training ground and working with players and, like Matt Hall would tell you, working where they're going to get better and working in the passing day in and day out. And but it was a privilege. You know, I played every level for my country and then managed my country. So as Manty says, it's not bad for a wee boy coming from Cumnock, you know, so that is good.
Brian Pan signing, going back to the
exactly
to the previous chat. Absolutely fantastic. So just bringing things a little bit more up to date, you're playing plenty of golf at the moment. We spoke off air, you know, you've got your son-in-law at Milton Keynes Dons at the moment, doing fantastically well. Is he calling up for plenty of advice?
Yeah, I go to quite a few of the games. I mean, I've been to most of all the home games at Ipswich for the last 8 years. Playing a bit of golf and go to the gym, and try and get a few holidays in. You know, I still, as I say, go down to Ipswich, and, you know, from there. I seen Mark Ashton for about 2 seconds when I was down at Terry Butcher was at Portman Road getting into the Hall of Fame of England. He said he, you know, have a chat with us and introduce us to the chairman and the owners, but that never happened. So I'm still going and watching and enjoying the games.
Yeah, well, funnily enough, actually, let's talk about modern day Ipswich briefly before we go. At the Q&A I was at, as I spoke about earlier in September, you said at the time, actually back in September, that you weren't overly keen on this strategy of bringing in 20 brand new players and, you know, completely scrapping a squad of players. In terms of squad building, how quickly, realistically, can that be done?
I think Ipswich has got a really good squad. I think the selection has been good for the first division. They've got so many different alternatives. Two or three players for every position. Yeah, I think very good. I think the last few years, the formation they've played hasn't suited the players. We've talked about, you know, round pegs, square holes, jigsaw puzzle. They've had the squad, but they haven't got the best out of them. I think John McGrail came in and changed it after two games. Kevin, you know, has come in and it looks good. I think they've, you know, adjusting it to that three at the back, suits the players and midfield, two up front. I think, yeah, they're getting it right, which is great. And it gives them a chance now. I really think they'll get in the top six, where I wouldn't have given them a chance a month ago. I think with the squad they've got, I think they've got a good chance. They're going to get, you know, plenty good coaching in the training grounds. They've got a good squad. They've got the finance. I mean, you look at MK Dons, I think their wage bill is about 3 million. Ipswich is 10 million. So they've got the finance. They've got the squad. I think they've got a really good coach there.
Yeah.
I hope he's, you know, he did well and give a full license to work with the players. And I honestly think now they'll finish in the top six. What's been phenomenal for me in the last 8 years is the fans. I mean, I've been sitting there watching for the last 8 years, especially since Mick's left. It's, you know, it hasn't been great, to say the least. But the fans, you know, 26,000, 24,000, the atmosphere, and they're putting the referee under pressure at home. I fancy them to win every game. So that's been incredible. And I think a town which used to be vibrant has gone a bit. And it's great that the fans have got something to cheer about. And I think they've got a good squad of players. I think they will, for me, get into that top six.
Wonderful stuff. Well, here's hoping, fingers crossed. As you say, very, very early doors. But, you know, from what we've all seen from Kieran McKenna, it's looking encouraging from what little we've seen at the moment. So, yeah, fingers crossed. Well, George, I think we're done. Once more, thank you so much for your time. You've been more than generous with your time today. I really, really appreciate it. I'm sure all the viewers and listeners will be absolutely fascinated by what you've had to say, and would finally just like to join me in thanking you for everything that you've done for our club. Thank you very much, George. Take care.
Thank you.
It's the promotion running. Everyone is gathered round to watch. The McNuggets share boxes are there, offering much needed distraction. Your mate's already been booked for double dipping, but in you swoop to steal the last nugget and claim all 3 points. Oh, and there is the Harry Clark fist pump to celebrate. Order McDelivery now on the McDonald's app. You in at participating restaurants.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.